8:45, quarter till 9, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Joshua Fisher Birch joins us now, a researcher at the Counter Extremism Project. Good morning, Joshua. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine. How about yourself?
I'm okay, sir. Thanks for taking the time. I find it interesting, looking at this story at NOLA.com from our friend Sam Carlin that you're quoted in. When you heard about the Bourbon Street attack, it didn't seem strange or odd to you at all, did it?
No, unfortunately. I mean, this really fits the profile of a large quantity of ISIS propaganda that the group and the group's online supporters have been putting out for years in terms of suggestions for the types of attacks to commit, as well as encouraging people to commit those attacks.
And in reading this article and in our conversation this morning, one thing I wanted to bring up is that, you know, I see the video of the Bourbon Street attacker riding his bicycle on Halloween that was captured on video. And you just, I guess, have to wonder, not to be paranoid or anything, Joshua, but who might be riding their bicycles around today or driving around or looking for weaknesses, not just here, but all over the country. Am I being paranoid when I say that, or just realistic?
Well, I mean, this is the problem of lone actor terrorism. And this is the idea of individuals who become radicalized and inspired to commit acts of violence and do this outside of networks where they're not communicating with others and where this is not being planned. So certainly on one hand, you know, the threat of lone actor terrorism exists. On the other hand, you know, this type of paranoia of suspecting one another, of, you know, these divisions in society is also one of the goals of the groups behind these types of attacks and behind groups that inspire these types of attacks. You know, they thrive on division.
Let's talk about communications and networks and online magazines and so forth. When did ISIS begin to do this, or has it always been in their playbook? Tell me about all of it, if you would, Joshua, please.
Sure. So, I mean, this online component of ISIS propaganda has been incredibly important, you know, since the group's founding. This is one of the ways that they were able to get foreign fighters to come and join them fighting in Syria and Iraq. You know, and this, you know, this continues to this day, you know, even though this is now over a decade later, a lot of this type of propaganda, you know, these magazines, these videos, these guides that the group and similar groups have put out, it remains online. And in the case of ISIS, there are pro-ISIS online supporters who continue to produce this content, to translate it, and who really spread this. And, you know, this was something that actually ISIS pointed out in their recent online newsletter where, you know, where they acknowledged the New Orleans attack. And they said, you know, this was done by someone inspired by ISIS propaganda, and it's incredibly important that people continue to share and translate it.
So let's talk about this whole ISIS playbook and the ISIS magazine, and do I go looking for it? Does it come looking for me? Take me through all of that, if you would, Joshua.
Sure. So, you know, this type of ISIS propaganda exists on very specific parts of the internet. You know, so there are platforms like Telegram. There are other types of communications platforms they use. In some cases, it's shared on social media, and it's really one of the goals of ISIS online supporters is to maintain their online presence, maintain that community. But also, it at certain points, and especially like right now, part of this is also about sharing that propaganda to a larger audience so that they can reach a larger group of people. However, when they do that, they also risk further takedowns from social media companies. They risk, you know, law enforcement partnering with communications companies to remove these online communities.
So I'm looking at this online magazine affiliated with ISIS, Rumiya, however you say it. Could I access that if I look that up or not? I don't want to, but I'm just saying, could I?
Yeah, if you looked hard enough, you would be able to find that. And, you know, it's there are definitely parts of the internet that don't require a great deal of skill, you know, where you can find older content like Rumiya. You know, that I think the issue you're referring to came out in 2016. But then more recent content, such as ISIS's weekly Al Naba newsletter, you know, continues to be available on a wide variety of sites.
Let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back. We're talking about the Bourbon Street terror attack right out of the ISIS playbook. Our guest is Joshua Fisher Birch, research at the Counter Extremism Project. And I know Christopher Wray said that lone wolf terrorist attacks, that's the biggest threat that the country's facing. The FBI director, associate director, I guess, Christopher Wray, saying that vehicle ramming's been used by extremists for years. And how do you go about identifying this or preventing it? Or is this the new normal? 851, 9 till 9, traffic now, WWL. 856, Tommy Tucker, WWL, back with Joshua Fisher Birch, researcher at the Counter Extremism Project, talking about the Bourbon Street attack and ISIS. So, Muslims are not all bad people. Violent extremists are. I'm looking, Joshua, at the Carnegie Endowment website here about ISIS. The Islamic State presents itself as the representative of authentic Islam as practiced by the early generations of Muslims, Salafism, and it draws on an especially strict brand of Salafism, in particular, Wahhabism. So to lump all of this together with Muslims is wrong, A, and B, it's not accurate. So what exactly does ISIS believe, and how do they get a guy like the Bourbon Street attacker to buy into what they profess and then manifest his beefs by driving a truck through a group of people?
Sure. So, yeah, I mean, it's important to recognize that about 99.9% of the victims of ISIS have been other Muslims. This is a violent extremist group, you know, that promotes a very specific ideology. They view all of their enemies as being united against them. And, you know, this is a very, very small percentage of, you know, of extremists. It's and it's incredibly important in the aftermath of an event like this, you know, that to not allow violent extremists to sow division, you know, whether you're talking about ISIS or you're talking about white supremacist groups, these groups, you know, they need hatred in order to recruit. And it's important that people can, you know, stand together against division and further hatred. But to answer your question about, you know, ISIS propaganda, you know, this is important to remember that this is the early part of the investigation, that this is something that will be ongoing. And so regarding this specific individual's radicalization, you know, it's going to take research, it's going to take investigations, and, you know, law enforcement is going to have to, you know, let people know, you know, the results of these investigations. But, you know, but part of this is that these types of groups prey on people, you know, who are socially isolated, who have a lack of community, you know, who have psychological factors, financial problems, family problems. And, you know, and then this is combined with, in some cases, online radicalization and then the desire to do harm to others. And I think it's important to note here also that the attacker spoke in a video posted to social media about, at first, he was thinking of, you know, of harming his family. Mm-hmm. He considered his family his first target before reassessing. So, you know, this type of propaganda, and then the people who create this type of propaganda, these, you know, ISIS online communities, they are looking for individuals who they can convince to commit attacks.
Joshua,
and, you know, this is
there's never enough time. I hope you come back when we have more time, because this is important stuff.